All right, guys, we're going to get back to the show in just a second. But first, I'd like to talk about the sponsor of the show today. It's FireLion. They're an innovative and forward-thinking company that specializes in brand building, design, web development, consultation, and much more. The passionate team at FireLion is 100% committed to providing their clients with a state-of-the-art digital design. You can find out more and get in touch with FireLion at GoFireLion.com. That's GoFireLion.com. Guys, I've checked them out. They have awesome websites they've done. They're very professional. It looks great. Hit them up at GoFireLion.com.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Saturday, December 21st, 2019. Today, I've got a returning co-host. May not have heard her voice for a while, but she is back. And Mary Grader is going to join me on the show in just a couple of minutes as we discuss some of the big topics in WWE, as well as even fantasy books and stuff, as we always do. She always brings out some of the best and worst in me, as I told her on the air. And I mean that in a good way, of course. She got me fired up about a couple of things. So we're going to get into that as well. She just really got me going on a couple of things, including the commentary team of Monday Night Raw. And we're going to definitely get into that, as you will listen to. But first, guys, thank you. As always, got to start with a thank you for listening to this show, because we know there are thousands of options out there. We know that your availability of wrestling audio is certainly not scarce, and we want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this show as opposed to others, and maybe you listen to others. Hell, I listen to others, right? I'm not going to play or pretend that I don't listen to other podcasts, because I do. But I want to thank you for choosing to take your time out now to listen to this show. It is much appreciated. We know that you guys are helping us grow, because we can see it, and thank you so much. And if you want ads removed from this show, easy to do. You can head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get yourself in the game here, in the game. And I know that many of you have said, oh, it'd be great if you didn't have ads. Well, the thing is, obviously monetizing your show is going to require ad space, and you can go ahead and get yourself ad free. All you got to do is head on over to Patreon, and the entire library is available for you for just $1 a month. So that's your ticket and key out of the ad filled shows. And I want to thank you guys for just sticking with us, and subscribing and commenting, and emailing us how we can improve the show. So we're going to get into all that kind of stuff. But speaking of sponsors, I do want to talk about the sponsor of the show for today, and that is FireLion. And FireLion is an innovative and forward thinking company that specializes in brand building, design, web development, consultation, and much more. The passionate team at FireLion is 100% committed to providing their clients with a state-of-the-art digital design. You can find out more and get in touch with them at FireLion, at GoFireLion.com. I checked out some of the sites they did. It's really well done. Professional. It looks great. And you can get in touch with them at GoFireLion.com. All right, guys. Well, so, as I said, Mary Grader and I have had a great conversation, and we discussed everything that's going on, and I would like to give you guys a conversation. But just a bit of a heads up, this coming week for Christmas, I am still going to be doing shows. I'm not in town per se for the next couple of nights, but that's usually my nights off anyway. So I'm going to be back Tuesday with your Monday Night Raw review, and Wednesday is still going to be Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm still checking in with co-hosts to see if they're able to crank out a couple of shows for me in AEW and NXT. Although AEW, I don't believe, has a show. I'll have to see if NXT has a show, and maybe we'll get that in for you. And then obviously Saturday is back to regularly scheduled programming as the holidays come to a close, and we look forward to New Year's. So we'll have to kind of improvise a little bit this week, but I'll still be getting you the SmackDown and Raw reviews as I normally do. Alrighty. Well, guys, let's get to it. Mary Grader and myself, buckle in. As always, she knows just how to poke the bear. And if you like rants or if you think I'm too negative, boy, I wouldn't jump on this podcast. We have a lot of good stuff to say. I will say that there's a lot of positive stuff that we have to talk about on the product. Randy Orton and AJ Styles, for example, Seth's heel turn, Daniel Bryan and The Fiend. A lot of good stuff, really, that we discuss as far as positivity. So those of you that review me and saying I rant too much, well, this may not be the one for you, but we do have the good and the bad in there with it. And I'm not going to give you a false view of how I view WWE. If they don't deserve praise, they ain't getting it. But they did, and in many instances. So enjoy the show, guys. And as I said earlier, I'll be back Tuesday with your Christmas Eve edition of the show. And then, of course, Wednesday night, Christmas night, I will be doing a Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm going to be dedicated to bringing you guys audio, and I think you'll enjoy it. So without further ado, guys, here's Mary Grader and myself. As always, I'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody, welcome to a Saturday edition of the show of the WWE Podcast. As we get closer and closer to Christmas and the stress levels get higher and higher, I'm bringing in our guest here, our co-host, welcoming back Mary Grader to the show. And we were talking off the air of just how wonderful the holidays are as grown-ass adults and how it becomes all about the kids, and yet you seem to be, and I seem to be, stressed off the charts, and our wallets are now drying up. So, Mary, welcome back to the show on this pre-Christmas edition of the WWE Podcast.
Thank you for having me back. I know I took an absence for a little bit, guys. It was a crazy month with school, but I'm done officially, and I'm back on the saddle. So I am here.
Yes, she is back. She's kind of like she's like CM Punk returning to the show. I mean, it feels like this is we have like CM Punk back. And she seems to bring out the best and worst in me. So like it's so true. It's so true. Like sometimes I'll come off and I'll be like, that didn't feel like, how did she bring that out of me? And other times I'm like, hey, that was a really awesome show. And other times you were the first one who actually had an explicit podcast because of the conversation we had. So like you are the reason for the explicit show. So I'm not complaining. I think that's an awesome thing, but no one else has been able to do that. So congratulations.
Thank you. So you're saying I'm the pot stirrer of the show.
Yeah. You stir the pot and then sit back and watch. You like light the flame and then you sit back and watch everyone else burn. So it's awesome. That's a good thing.
I mean, I have to do it considering, like you were saying, I'm stressed beyond my gills that I've been running around like a maniac nonstop for like 3 months. So yeah, I mean, if I can get a rise out of somebody and like, it fulfills me somehow, I'll do it. I'm not ashamed to admit that.
Well, no, you clearly have that talent. I don't know if it's Buffy that put it in you or if you were just born this way. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was just my lineage. It's how my family is.
Awesome. Well, that is a great trait to have on this show because I like people that challenge me and make me fired up and just plain out pissed off. I mean, sometimes I need that. So hopefully, we'll see if the conversation goes this way tonight. But I want to start talking with you about WWE because there's a lot going on, and as we close out 2019, and we really get into Royal Rumble season, the start of WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania, to me, has already begun as the Royal Rumble takes shape in 5 weeks. So what are some of the big things? What's the first thing that comes to mind that you look at that is a recent development, something that right off the bat you're like, I need to talk about this?
I was trying to think about this before we came on the show. I was saying to you, I've been super busy. So like wrestling's kind of been on in the background. I mean, I've been following storylines as much as I can. And you're right. There is a lot going on right now. So I'm like trying to remember everything that's going on right now. But the one thing that sticks out in my mind right now is Asuka and Kairi Sane. I mean, they're on an incredible heel championship run and making the titles seem like they're worth something for the first time in that division. And, like, Asuka's getting the play that she should have gotten, like, 3 years ago, and it's really exciting to watch because they're the best thing in the division right now.
Yeah, they are. I love what they've done with them. You know, people have complained about, look, oh, when they had the handicap match with Becky and Charlotte, that Becky and Charlotte looked too strong and that they were, you know, it made the tag champions, I guess, defined down a little bit because they couldn't handle a two-on-one situation. I don't know if I agree with that. I think that the Kabuki Warriors have really set out and I think overachieved from what originally was probably constructed for this team. I like what they've done with them. They continue to hold those championships. I don't know for how long. I hope it's a much longer run than some anticipate. I love what they've done. I like how they've been booked. Kairi Sane is unfortunately now out with an injury. I don't believe it's going to be too long, but after their TLC match with Becky and Charlotte, I can see why. That match was brutal.
Yeah, it was a good match to watch. And, like, speaking of Kairi Sane, I hated her. Not that she was a bad wrestler or anything like that. I hated her gimmick. And, like, we've always been saying on the show, every time we talk about character changes and what you can do to refresh a character, like, they changed her music. Asuka started doing the mist and got the green makeup. And then Kairi Sane came out and, like, just changed her whole gimmick into, like, a geisha, you know. And they kind of, like, are, like, gangsters to me. I don't know. They're, like, got that, what's the friggin' Japanese mafia vibe? Yakuza vibe to them. Like, they're assassins, so I think they're doing great, and it's, you know, just those little tweaks made them completely different characters. I mean, she's just evil laughing all the time. It's amazing. And they're not breaking, like, they're saying F the English, they're speaking in Japanese. They don't care if you understand them or not. It's awesome to watch it. I think it's a really good thing that's developed. That's the cool thing that I've liked so far.
I agree. Like, they have, and especially that's a good point to bring up about Kairi's gimmick, that she was just this Japanese pirate, which made no sense, and it was a little hokey and too much over the top to not be real. And I like that they've dialed it down and they've kind of blended their entrances together. It's a much more cohesive unit. She got rid of the stupid pirate gimmick and she's something more believable, and the whole screaming in Japanese, I'm fine with that. I know that also the AOP are doing the same thing in their own language, so, you know, it's not the only team out there doing this. It could benefit them both to actually learn the English language rather than just leaning on the heat that, oh, you don't know English or you don't know our language, so we're going to scream in our language and it's supposed to annoy you type of strategy, and we're the evil foreign invaders. I mean, that can work to an extent, but we have multiple teams doing this now. So I don't know. I mean, I think it would benefit them in the long run to have, you know, learn some more basic English. So
I agree with you. I think they will, but I'm looking at it, I guess, in a completely different point of view. I know AOP is doing it also, but, like, there's something about Japanese wrestlers doing it. It's like I don't know why, and it's not trying to say it, like, I hope it doesn't come off bad. It just, I feel like they're coming off like, no, like, you don't know, like, our language. Like, I feel like they just don't care. And they're like, we're Japanese, and this is who we are, and we're going to speak in Japanese, and we're going to scream and cheer. I mean, they're screaming because they're hyped up. I don't think that's, like, the gimmick, but they're just completely talking in Japanese, and they don't care. Like, they're acting like they are superior to everybody else. I don't know. That's the vibe I get from it.
And the language itself, the flow of the language of Japanese lends itself better to screaming. I think just the way when it's screamed, even though you don't know what they're saying, you kind of can fill in maybe what they're saying. It's just a much better language to scream in, if that makes sense. And to talk down to the fans in, and the tone of it is very forceful, and I'm fine with that too. But as far as Asuka, though, it seems as if Becky Lynch has now set her sights on Asuka, and the promo she cut on Monday night in a sit-down interview, she mentioned that Asuka is someone that she needs to beat, and that she's felt a little bit off the last couple of months, and that she needs to beat Asuka because she's never beat her before. And if you remember, prior to the WrestleMania main event last year, the Triple Threat, well, really this past year, soon to be last year, we had Becky Lynch lose to Asuka, and we were all saying, what the hell is this? She's going to be facing Ronda Rousey. Why is she losing to Asuka? So for them to bring this back up and make it something that Becky Lynch needs to overcome, she needs to beat Asuka for her career, for herself, and for her reign as champion. I like it. What do you think about this Asuka Becky really collision course that we're on?
I think it's good. I think that they should be focusing on Asuka. They should have been focusing on Asuka for the last 2 years. I mean, the way that they ended her undefeated streak coming from NXT over, and then just to have Charlotte beat her like willy-nilly, and she won the Rumble, and like just it the whole thing was convoluted. So while like I'm glad that they're using something that actually happened. I'm sorry, my cat is screaming out of bag right now. I got distracted. I appreciate they're doing that. I don't know if it was Charlotte who said, like, they were bringing up that she, like, was beaten, like, unexpectedly and stuff like that. So I'm just happy that they're focusing on her and they're treating her how they should have treated her 2 years ago, because she's a force to be reckoned with. So
she is. And I'm just concerned that this will just be another milestone for Becky, and it's going to be more about Becky.
I think Becky's losing the title soon. Really? I really do. I have to believe that. I don't think that she is going to have the title for much longer. I just don't know who she's going to lose it to. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Charlotte, but it seems like they're kind of a cohesive unit right now. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise if they dropped it to Asuka.
And with Nia Jax looming in the background for a return, I could see her, Nia Jax, maybe costing her the belt, or maybe upon her return, grabbing the belt from her and causing. Oh, my mic went out. I think that having Nia Jax come back, she's a great heel. I do not like Nia Jax as a face. Nia Jax was born to be a heel. I like her as a heel. She's much more dislikable as an actual person. So that helps me dislike her as a wrestling character. I just think that having her come back, she's getting closer and closer from what I'm understanding. So Nia Jax out there is, I think, the wild card for costing her the championship to maybe Asuka, or ending up taking it herself.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know when she's coming back yet. So I haven't even thought that far ahead to Nia Jax. I honestly hope they don't put her immediately in the title picture. They probably are going to. I still think Nia Jax needs a lot of work. She's great as a heel, though. But we'll see. We'll see how they'll play it out. I mean, I know she was pulled from that scene when she had to get the double, you know, ACL surgery. And it's awesome that she's able to come back and return. But I'm just trying to think of the division right now, how it is standing, and who else has actually shown any initiative. I mean, Dana Brooks, like, getting all these shots all of a sudden, which is really, really bizarre, mm-hmm. Moving up the ladder. But the division's kind of flat, and Asuka is kind of like the, and Kairi Sane, I don't want to, like, exclude them. They're the two things that are, like, flickering in the distance, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're just there, and I haven't really focused on anything else, so I think that Becky drops the title to Asuka. That's a bold prediction, but it might happen.
I'm fine with it, and I hope, you know what, I hope Nia Jax is a non-factor. I hope she doesn't exist in this whole story and that Asuka beats her straight up. I'm fine with Becky losing to somebody fair and square. I don't always need a babyface to only lose because a heel cheats to win. I'm fine with a heel winning clean once in a while, and then having the babyface have an actual challenge to try to overcome. I don't always need the cheating to win. So I'm fine with Asuka winning clean, and maybe Kairi could help out if she's not injured, or maybe she does. Maybe Asuka uses the miss to win. Whatever, don't care. But I'm ready for Becky's reign to be over. I mean, we've had our fun. It's been a hell of a reign. She's the only remaining champion from WrestleMania. This has been a fun ride, certainly ups and downs, but I'm ready for her to drop the belt. I mean, I just am. And Becky's done a hell of a job, but it's just time to do it. Could she go all the way to WrestleMania? Maybe. We're closing in on, in just a few months, WrestleMania will be back. 3.5 months. WrestleMania will be back. We're not far away from it. So maybe they go the full year and have her drop it at WrestleMania. But so moving on, though, I do want to talk to you because I know we don't have a ton of time tonight, but that's good because it forces us to move along and not go on tangents. Is what do you think? What are your thoughts on Daniel Bryan's transformation back to his 2011 look? It's like he got in a time machine and instantly, you know, became 8 years younger. And he got his hair pulled out by the Fiend a number of weeks ago, although if he got his hair pulled out, there'd be bald patches and not just a cleanly shaved head. But that's neither here nor there. So he actually transformed himself back to the 2011 version of himself. I like it, personally. But he's now going to be in this triple threat match next week on SmackDown between him, Baron Corbin, and... oh, gosh. Why? It's drawing a blank for me. Well, who is it? Who is it? It's the Triple Threat. Oh, The Miz.
Miz. Like, wait. Jeez. Like, somebody's listening, and I can't remember who it is either, because, again, there's so much stuff going on right now.
Yeah. So Triple Threat between these three next week. Winner faces Bray Wyatt, The Fiend, at the Royal Rumble for the Universal Championship. It seems like a foregone conclusion that Daniel Bryan's going to win this, but what do you make of this whole storyline? The Miz isn't getting much of a reaction. He's really not, even though he's trying to bring his family into this and create sympathy. But Daniel Bryan seems to be, I think, really reinventing himself and coming back to his grassroots of how what got him into the where he is now back in 2011.
The whole Daniel Bryan showed up looking like it was weird. You're like, what? I haven't seen that face in forever. You forget that's how he looked and when he started this storyline with AJ and stuff like that. I don't know what's going on. Daniel Bryan's kind of like Chris Jericho in a way where he always reinvents himself. He kind of has like certain personas, even though he was doing the, you know, the vegan hipster thing for a while. He always knows where he's at, but he was very American Dragon when he was doing that. So I don't know what's going on with him, but he's back over again. The Yes Chants were back on Friday. It was just another quick turnover, though. Like, Bray Wyatt kidnapped him, and then he was, like, gone for a week, and then he just pops back up. Like, what happened, you know? So those little things annoy me, but you're right. The Miz isn't getting any play right now, and it's just a weird storyline because I don't see Bray dropping the title anytime soon. So I don't know what's going on with Daniel Bryan reverting to his former self, like how he was when he was with The Miz during NXT. But it's just they're trying to keep him relevant, and I think they're trying to keep him happy, and I think they're trying out like different things. So I don't know if this is the final version that we're going to see of Daniel Bryan.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think that the transformation of Daniel Bryan needed to happen. His character, I don't think it ever really reached the full heel potential that they could have done. And I was very, very skeptical as I you know, talked about all summer, even into the fall of this whole whodunit with Roman Reigns, that it would eventually come back to Daniel Bryan being the mastermind, which it didn't. And that whole storyline was a waste of everyone's time for 3 months. And it was Eric Rowan, who of which they're not doing anything with either. So I thought that Daniel Bryan was going to continue to be a heel. He wasn't. They transformed him back into slowly being the reviver of the Yes Movement. He's, I think, done a great job. He is the top babyface on SmackDown, hands down. I think that could 2020 be the second round of the second wave of the Yes Movement and be Daniel Bryan's biggest year yet? I don't know. I mean, maybe. Daniel Bryan is so easily likable that probably. And I think collateral damage of this whole thing is The Miz, because you have a guy fighting for his family. His family was attacked in his own home by Bray Wyatt, and yet you're still kind of finding yourself looking at The Miz going, well, you know, I like, it's just kind of, it's weird. Like, you know, like, I know what WWE's going for, but you're still, and you feel like a bad human being, but you're kind of like, eh, I don't really care about your family, Miz. I mean, it's just, it's weird. And I'm like,
it's weird because he's been so over for the last couple of months, too. Like, everybody's like The Miz, and then they, you know, they crap the bed as they do with most stuff. They get stuff and then they try other things. But I don't think you can have sympathy for Maurice. That's another angle of it. I don't think fans care about her as much as they would like to believe, even though their show is hilarious and I love it. As far as Daniel Bryan goes, I honestly still think we were just saying, could this be the second wave of Daniel Bryan? I wanted to cut you off and go, oh, yeah, well, as long as they keep his wife away from him. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. Daniel Bryan came back and he was hot. And then Brie Bella started stealing his moves because she can't wrestle. And then she injured a bunch of people. And then he went heel like immediately after that because he lost. The yes things felt cheap when Brie was doing it. So I feel like this also might have just been a distance thing. Like, let's get him do this, and now he's back in the saddle of what made him so popular and huge. So you're right, it could happen. Just make sure Brie Bella doesn't return to wrestling and partner with him. Those are, like, instant, like, look what happened with Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. It's, like, instant put out now. Unless you're a believable, like, wrestling couple together, like, you have some history, I just feel like it's forced when they do that, when they bring wives into it and stuff like that.
It's a risky deal when they do that. And I know that it's such a gamble, and I would say more often than not, it doesn't work. You have these couples that come on screen, and they may have amazing chemistry, and things are steamy behind the scenes, but when they turn the camera on, all that goes away, and they just sometimes don't have that chemistry on air. We've seen it time and time again. It did a lot of damage to Seth over the summer, a lot of damage to Becky, although I think she rebounded much easier and much nicer than Seth did. And yeah, I agree. I don't want to see Maryse and Miz. Although they were better on screen, I wouldn't want to see Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan come out and have Brie Bella kind of play second fiddle and really riding Daniel Bryan's coattails of standing in the shadow of her husband. It just doesn't work well. I don't need it. There's no need for it. Keep Brie Bella home. But yeah, Maryse, to your point about winning Mother of the Year, I don't think she's going to win it. I mean, she stood there, both her and Daniel Bryan, looking at the webcam on their iPad of the creepy dolls in their daughter's bed, and then standing there for way longer than you ever should. If you actually see that in your daughter's crib, why would you stand there and just go, oh my God? And there was such a 30 second delay of like,
it was weird.
Like, why aren't you guys getting the F up there? And like, and she, the Miz let Maryse in the room first. Was that like supposed to be a rib? I mean, like, if you're the man of the house, don't you go in? Like, he's like, yeah, go in. And there's this red light shining from the room.
It's weird because, like, they usually have really good on-screen chemistry. Like, all the stuff they did with John Cena and Mickey Mello was fantastic.
I love that.
She's a great heel. Like, I just feel like real life, like, it just came off really awkward. So I don't know if that's why Miz just feels like a piece that shouldn't be in this equation. It should be Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan because they actually have a history together. Like, he was in the family. And if you saw one of the Firefly funhouses, he said that he goes, I had a family once when he was talking to Miz, and they cut and it was a scene with Daniel Bryan in the family. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. It had Daniel Bryan in there. So that makes more sense. I thought it was interesting. He finally came out as Bray Wyatt to the match against The Miz at TLC, which you've been saying for months. You were wondering if they were ever going to do that, and they hadn't done it until TLC. So that was interesting to see him fall over basically and take a beating as Bray Wyatt. So that's an interesting thing. Bray Wyatt's doing a phenomenal job with everything. Even if I feel like they put the title on him way too fast, they've done a good job of keeping it on him and reasoning as why he hasn't been defending it.
And we haven't seen The Fiend in a while. And I said that that's a key to this whole thing, is to make sure they don't. And that's what WWE does when they go, ooh, we got something, let's put it on. Yeah. And the more we do it, the better it's going to be. And people will love it because we have it on more. And I think that somebody has pulled the leash back on Vince McMahon and said, no, Vince, listen, this guy is so over because he's not here all the damn time. That's what makes The Fiend so special, is the fact that he is not on TV every week. I don't need to see him every week. If he's there once a month, great. And I think that whoever is talking in Vince's ear about that whole part of it to make this successful is really should be applauded.
Maybe it's Bray.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like when anybody else says something to Vince, it works.
I know. Oh my God. But I do feel, just kind of wrapping up on this topic, I feel that The Miz is kind of a, like I said, collateral damage, because the support is going behind Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan has turned babyface in a like completely now. He has fully gone babyface, and the fans have been kind of trying to get behind him. I think if Daniel Bryan wasn't a babyface right now, there would be more support for The Miz. But Daniel Bryan has sucked the air completely away from the, you know, from the momentum that The Miz had, any momentum he had as a babyface. And he was starting, I think, to get more and more of a positive reaction after being a heel for 10 years. It's going to take some time, and now Daniel Bryan has completely taken that away, and the crowd's going, you know, well, Miz, we don't really care. I mean, you look at the hot tag that happened on SmackDown. There was almost no reaction to that, and then you have Daniel Bryan turning full babyface. The Miz is, unfortunately, just all the energy from it has been sucked into Daniel Bryan.
I mean, he's getting left in the dust. And I mean, you got to understand also, everybody pretty much knows the history of The Miz and Daniel Bryan. This isn't something that's new. The way they treated Daniel Bryan when he was on NXT and Miz was his pro, which was hilarious because at that point, Daniel Bryan had been wrestling for like 12 years or something like that. So I think that's another reason why the crowd is definitely siding with Bryan, because within those two people, you hate The Miz. You know, Daniel Bryan has worked his butt off to get where he is. Not that The Miz hasn't, but it's just two different paths that they took. So I think that plays a lot into it. But yeah, when you have Bryan and he's over as a babyface, you can't get more pure than that. I mean, John Cena is, you know, John Cena, but Daniel Bryan did a really, really good job of getting that lightning in the bottle. Like, the New Day has it too. Like, people just don't want to hate them. It's the same thing where their heels, where people don't want to like them. So, yeah, Miz will probably get phased out in this storyline. He's not going to go after Bray Wyatt. Like, Bray Wyatt's going to destroy him. But I feel like there's a longer thing going with Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt because they actually have a history behind it.
There is. And I think that The Miz has never, ever, ever fully shaken off the fact that he's a reality TV star. I think that has still that followed him, and I think still kind of to some degree follows him, that he came from a reality TV show, and he's never really taken that and shook it off. And I think that will forever follow him, and it's just going to be part of his character. And yeah, I don't know. So I lost my train of thought. The next topic you were gonna you talked about. I lost it. But
do you want me to bring up something?
Yeah, I don't know, because there was something. I was like, damn it, I was gonna bring that up. It probably will come back to me. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about too. Speaking of turns, is the Seth Rollins turn.
That's what I was going to bring up. So
fully turned. Yeah, good. That wasn't it, but it'll somehow randomly come back to me.
Yeah.
These holidays, I'm telling you, my mind is like fried right
now.
That's
been my mind for like 2 months. It's all good, dude.
Yeah, I'm on fumes, so bear with me. But the Seth Rollins turn, before I give my thoughts, give me yours.
It's interesting. It was needed. It was absolutely 100% needed. Seth Rollins is a way better heel than he is a face. I feel the same way about AJ Styles. Like, AJ Styles, side note, has been hilarious. I've loved everything they've done with him for the last 2 months. Anyway, Seth needed this. Like we were saying, the Becky thing hurt him, and he wasn't believable as a defending champion. I don't know when it happened. He kind of lost his luster, and he just has that weaselly rat demeanor of himself. So I think after a while, people just got sick of it. There are certain people that need to, you know, move around. But I don't know what they're doing with putting him with AOP. It seems like when Seth is bad, he needs backup, which is not a bad thing. I just wish he would stick with, like, certain people. I feel like AOP is just being forced on him because they like their look and they don't know what to do with them. And they should have kept Paul Ellering with them, but apparently he didn't want to travel. So that's why that happened. So it's interesting what they're doing with AOP. It's interesting what they're doing with Seth Rollins. What I want to get into, because I'm Mary and I'm a, you know, pot stirrer and I'm conspiracy theory Mary. So I was listening to his promo when he was beating up, like, I was listening to commentary, I'm sorry, talking about him when he got into all these interactions and everything that's going on with Kevin Owens. I like what's going on with Kevin Owens. There's believability behind the storyline because of their history with ROH, and they're bringing it into that. So that's pretty cool. They called him the Messiah, like a Messiah on commentary. And I'm just like, I feel like this is still a long play for CM Punk. Seth Rollins, and I know we were supposed to do a show. We were planning on doing a show together, and then my life went poof. So it didn't happen. The CM Punk thing that Seth started and then, like, was on WWE backstage the week before Punk wasn't there, and, like, he, like, tiptoed around it. And I don't know if it was Vince going, go on the show, damn it, and say nothing's going on. But it just feels like they're building up Seth to be, like, this annoying, you know, what he's been doing heel right now. And I don't think Kevin Owens is necessarily going to be the guy to stop him. So I think there's money in a 30 CM Punk appearance at the Rumble and going after, because right now Rollins doesn't have a championship, and Owens said unless they're gonna have a match at Rumble and not have them in the Rumble, which makes absolutely no sense. They're both number one contenders for the title. Why wouldn't they be in the Rumble? I just feel like this is leading up to maybe a Punk interaction. It seems too clean for me, and it seems like something that Punk would get on board with if they have commentary playing onto it and saying that he's the Messiah, and like Punk did the whole SES thing and he was the Messiah. He's the voice of the voiceless, and this guy has been, like, just going back and forth and saying that people should, like, appreciate him and stuff like that. I don't know. That's me wanting stuff, which we go over a lot on the show, and it never happens, Dolph Ziggler. So that's my thoughts about it. I like what they're doing. I want to see where it's going. It's still too new for me to make, like, any claims if this is going to be good or bad or not.
Wow, a lot to unpack there. So holy crap.
I haven't seen you. All right. I haven't talked to you too much.
I know. So, like, everything just came out at once, so... All right. So first of all, I did remember what I was going to say. So my brain came back to me. The final point I was going to make is about Daniel Bryan was simply that if he's going to be facing Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble, does that mean he's in the Royal Rumble, right? Does that mean that he's exempt from the Royal Rumble? I would say no, although WWE could use that as an excuse. So if Roman Reigns wins it, which I think he's probably booked to do, and I think that's an awful idea, but it's probably going
didn't
to be happening.
Didn't that happen 4 years ago? Are you saying,
yeah, I'm telling you. Well, this is what I'm
saying. Yeah,
well, I'm telling you, this is the thing. In WWE, and I know this is getting another completely off topic, but and maybe we can circle back to it. But what I was going to say about Daniel Bryan simply was that if he's going to be facing Bray Wyatt, that means he probably isn't in the Rumble. Although we've seen champions who have or have people who lose championship matches, rather, who also enter themselves into the Royal Rumble. So it's not unheard of. Doesn't mean he's completely exempt, but maybe he's, you know, slated to be, quote, injured, so he can't be in the Rumble. And then, you know, that way they can't have Roman Reigns and the Daniel Bryan Part 2 that happened in Philly in 2015. But anyway, so that was my point about the Rumble and Daniel Bryan, which we all know it's going to end up being Bray Wyatt versus The Fiend at the Royal Rumble. The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. To your point about CM Punk and Conspiracy Theory Mary, that's I like that. Maybe that's like your ring name.
Conspiracy Theory Mary.
Yeah. That's a good one. I can see where you're into the conspiracy theory thing, and that's fine. I think that CM Punk is going to eventually come face to face with Seth Rollins in a WWE ring? I think the answer to that pretty confidently is yes. And I think, does it happen in 2019? No. Does it happen in 2020? I would say probably. And
that's a WrestleMania match.
It is. But, yeah, it is. And maybe that's the road they're going, but CM Punk better let WWE know, like, ASAP. And I think that it's cooled down a little bit between these two. It doesn't seem as if Punk is being as receptive to the criticism from Seth. Every time they're on backstage, they've never been on backstage together, which, if you're building a feud, makes sense that you have, you know, when you want to see them face-to-face, people want to pay to see it and spike a rating or whatever, buy the network. So they haven't come face-to-face, but they've thrown jabs. Seth more than Punk. It seems Seth wants this match more than Punk does. And maybe maybe Punk's just playing coy. I don't know. But to have CM Punk come back and do that in the whole thing with the Messiah, I never read into that, but you're the conspiracy theorist. That seems to suit you, and you know, props to you for seeing that. But I don't know if WWE is digging that deep or if Seth is digging that deep. Maybe they are, and they're rewarding fans who remember that kind of stuff.
I just, like, I don't know if they're digging that deep. But what I do know is, like I have always said about CM Punk, he's a businessman before he is a wrestler, and he's saying right now. But if Punk was gonna come back, he's gonna have a lot of creative control over himself, because that's gonna be written in blood in his contract if he ever steps back in a ring with WWE. But he also knows how to play the long game, and Seth might have picked this fight. But who's to say there hasn't been parties reaching out or Seth and Punk haven't been talking behind everybody's back? I don't think this is a malicious thing. I think this is something that Seth Rollins wants, and he wants to be the dude who faces Punk when he comes back. It's a matter of time. And there was an interview with Stephanie McMahon the other day that's floating around, and she was basically, I will not say the explicit version of what I was going to say, but she's been kissing some butt for CM Punk and AJ Lee. She had lots of nice things to say about AJ Lee, and everybody knows that when the women's movement or the diva revolution or whatever started when AJ was still here, you know, AJ was taking shots at Stephanie and saying that she wasn't doing her job as, you know, this woman in the field to promote the women, and that the women were getting side cut and stuff like that. So for Stephanie McMahon to come out and be like, I would love to have AJ Lee in the division right now, she's the one, she basically was like, she's the one who started all of this, which we all know is true, and said, you know, I would like to have Punk back, but Punk says he's not interested. There's talking going on. Punk's just not going to be an idiot this time, and this, he's going to get everything he wants. And even if everybody thinks that's him being a spoiled brat, it is, but that's who he is, and he knows that people want it. There's more people that want it than don't want it and are just like, ah, screw Punk. He's a sellout. Yeah, you know what? He is. But he's making money. You would want that money, too. He's doing what he's got to do, and he hasn't actually. He's going to do it on his terms. So maybe I'm reading into it too much, but it just seems like something that he would play into long-term, how he plays, how he thinks of wrestling should be, and them giving it to him. So, again, conspiracy theory, Mary saying things she wants.
It's interesting. I'd love to hear your conspiracy theories on, like, stuff non-wrestling related, right? Like,
oh, God, you don't even
Oh, God,
that.
Like, the World Trade Center was actually blown up.
No,
it wasn't
no,
hit
I'm
by
not
a
one
plane.
Of those. I'm not
like,
one of those.
Okay.
Alien stuff, maybe, but
alien
not stuff,
stuff
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, oh, there's, you know, UFOs, which I don't know. That's a whole other topic, which, but short
World
answer,
stuff
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Like, aliens yep. exist. Like, end of, I mean, before I get, I don't want to dive in there because that's a long ass conversation. But yeah, conspiracy theorists, and maybe we'll do something on the side at some point. But I'd love to hear your other things that you have in your brain that, yeah, yeah, it's I can tell that that's
yes,
a rabbit
pretty,
hole. But
it's pretty mangled in here.
But yeah.
Anyway, getting back to the Punk thing,
yeah, it's just
I
like,
just think that there's money in it. Like, think about the pop Punk would get at 30. And that's the only reason why I want to poo-poo on the Daniel Bryan thing, because they won't make that same mistake twice. You can't have Punk show up at the Rumble and have Daniel Bryan show up at the Rumble unexpectedly. But it does make sense for Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens to be in the Rumble if they're not facing each other, which I feel like they still need more build-up. That might be the WrestleMania match. I don't know. I'm just saying, it seemed really cut off really quick, unless, like, you know, creative was just like put a kebab on it, or Punk personally was like, stop calling me out in public. Like, mm-hmm. He seems like the guy who would do that. I don't want to believe that. And I think that Seth Rollins is a really good comeback match for Punk. I think that would be an excellent match.
I think Punk, and we all need to understand, Punk is smarter than almost all of us, right?
Yes.
Punk is a superior being when it comes to wrestling intelligence, and what he knows when he says anything about a comeback, that people are going to dissect it and somehow like twist it into, oh, that's Punk being code for I'm coming back. Punk knows everything that he says is going to be magnified, torn apart, chopped up. He knows. So Punk, everything he says is deliberate, and I don't know if it's going to be some kind of Morse code we have to decode, or if it's just him being very simple in his answers and trying to be honest. I mean, but the thing is, it hurts your head to think about it either way. And I'm just going to – I could sit here and try to think about a million ways that he has said things to put them together to get a decoder to, you know, put some 3D glasses on and, you know, hold it this far away from my face and then I see the picture. I think that if we just take him at face value and say that he's not going to come back, we all know that that's not the truth. I think we all believe at some point he's coming back. And it's probably going to be against Seth Rollins, but I think what he's putting us on a loop for is when and how. And that's the fun part. He knows that. I mean, I'm talking about it now because he knows that anything he says is going to be talked about, and that's what I'm doing right now. So I'm going to let Punk be smarter than me because he is, and that's fine. And I will, you know, as we get closer and we get bigger hints, which could be at the Rumble, I would not put Punk in the Rumble. People have been talking about him in the Rumble. Why? Why would you put CM Punk in the Rumble to just have a massive pop just to get thrown out? You can't have him win in main event. I mean, against who? Brock Lesnar? Against The Fiend? He can't do it.
Brock. Well, no, he hasn't beaten Brock. Did he beat Brock? He put a hell of a fight up with Brock. Yeah. That was a great, 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 great feud. Yes. I mean, it was Wolverine versus Sabretooth. It was Wolverine versus Hulk. It was amazing. So I don't think it's for a pop. I just think it's the way that you bring back certain people. Like, mm-hmm. You couldn't have had AJ Styles debut in any other way than showing up as a surprise entrance at the Rumble. Like, yeah. That's something, and the last match that Punk had was the Rumble, and he was in it for, like, 55 minutes before he got eliminated. He was, like, number 3, I think. So, and then he was gone, and everybody was like, what the hell is going on? So I think it's full circle. And I think it's just a good way to bring somebody back. Like, if you don't do it there, you do it at Mania. But, I mean, how many Hardy Boy surprises can you have at Mania like that? I think Punk comes back and sets up a storyline for himself at Mania. Because everybody knows his personal business. Like you say, like, everything's going to be under a microscope. Everything's going to be picked apart. And that's basically, we know what happened. We know what happened with the doctor. We know what happened with Colt Cabana. We know what happened with the Rumble. We know everything that happened. We know what happened with Triple H. You know, so I just feel like he's not going to do that discredit to himself. And that coming back at the Rumble is just like, who doesn't want to be number 30 in the Rumble and hear their I don't know if he's going to win, but who's to say that he wouldn't win?
Mm-hmm. I'm not disagreeing. See, now you're trying to convince me. And
I'm not trying to convince you. I'm playing devil's advocate, and I'm a PNC punk mark.
and I know you are. I think your bias is playing into your – I think your brain and your heart are two different things right now, right?
But I don't think anybody would crap on it if he did win the Rumble. That's
no. Oh, God, no. No, I wouldn't crap on it. I just don't see it happening to go from obscurity and
– I see a lot of things happening, but
– Yeah, I know. And you could – you know, you bring up AJ Styles, and they did it, and he didn't win the Rumble. But AJ Styles he did not grow up in WWE. He gained his notoriety and his brand outside of WWE, and the fans exploded, but not because of like, oh my God, I'm so glad he's back. It was because, hey, this guy's actually here. And WWE's plan was to make an impact and make it known that, oh my God, AJ Styles is here. He put up a good fight. You know, he came out right after Roman Reigns. It was a great way to introduce him, but none of us actually thought I didn't think he was going to win the Rumble at that point. And it was a great way as an introduction. This is a homecoming. This is a different feeling for Punk to just get thrown out. I think it's just, I don't feel it's a good idea. While people, every time that buzzer goes down and they count down and you think you're going to hear, you know, Cult of Personality, and I will be one of them too, because I'm a damn mark and I'm a fool. I just don't think it's going to happen. Especially when we get to like 27, 28, 29, and 30. I know that 30th spot, people always are just think it's a massive return. I mean, it's happened though. Look at what happened with John Cena returning eight months early from injury and back in 2009.
Look, everybody crapped at Cena at the time. Everybody was crapping on him. Cena now has gotten that status where nobody kind of poops on him anymore because he's John Cena. But at the time, everybody was crapping out on him, and he came out. Everybody was like, oh my God, we're whole.
Yeah.
You know, that was a huge return, especially because he is a cyborg and he came back 8 months early. But I don't know. I just think it's fitting. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. I'm like saying like I'm 80% wrong. But I do fantasy booking like that because I see, like, I'm trying to see, like, where the most money is. Like, Punk showing up at 30 at the Rumble, it's going to be ridiculous if he shows up. Like, but I don't know. He's still working for Fox, not WWE yet, so.
He likes to make that distinction. Yeah, he's very clear about that distinction. And you could say that, yeah, his contract's with Fox, but who's Fox's contract with? So he's like a subcontractor of WWE. Like, that's what he is.
He's in the world. That's all that matters. He's in the world. And that eventually means somebody's going to talk to him and somebody's going to bury a hatchet. And the only other reason I said this was also because their ratings have been in the crapper. I mean, it's been in the tank. So they are desperate to boost ratings. And they've been trying to do things like that, you know? So it just, I don't know. We'll see.
No, no, but
I can't wait for it though. And hopefully somebody will be here to film me.
What you need to do during the Royal Rumble is just have a live feed. I mean, whether it's your phone, your webcam, just for every single time that there's, you know, the buzzer goes off, you need to have it there just in case. Just in case you hear the Cult of Personality come on, just to see your reaction, because I'm sure it would go viral, you know, the next day, right? You need to do it.
I'm working on it. I'm thinking about it right now.
So from one topic of CM Punk booking our fantasy booking his return do I dare ask about Lashley, Lana, and Rusev and this whole thing of, let me shorten it. Lashley and Lana are now engaged and Rusev and Lana are officially divorced. And this story doesn't seem to be over. Lashley asked Lana because Lana asked him to ask her. And so is this any better for you for the last time we talked? Is this complete garbage? Are you interested in on any level from all of this sports entertainment-y stuff that Vince McMahon loves?
So here's my Rusev is funny with his shirts. And I think he's been very entertaining. Lana's doing her best job of, Betty Mae Davis? Who is the preacher's wife who spent all that money? She's doing, like, this great, like, annoying woman right now who's screaming and stuff like that. I think she's doing a good job, and she's giving it all her worth because she knows this is probably her last shot of getting any, like, TV play. It is what it is. I'm kind of paying attention to it. I don't care about it. I think there are other things that are going on that are more entertaining than that. But, I mean, good for her. I think Rusev is being hilarious. I like this side of Rusev. It shows that he has a personality. He's not just, like, some Russian militant. He's actually kind of funny. So I'm enjoying him in this whole entire thing. The rest of it, meh.
Yeah. And I hate it because I hate myself for watching it because I know how much my smart wrestling brain goes, this is complete crap. But then I'm like, I want to zone out because I've had a really long day. I don't want to think about anything. And I just want to, you know, veg out. And what do? I start getting into this and I don't want to. I get mad at myself for even being mildly entertained because, yes, Rusev is the saving grace for this with his Daffy Duck T-shirts and all the stuff he's been wearing. And Rusev without him, I think this would be even worse. There's just so many holes you could poke in this storyline. It's straight embarrassing. I mean, with the amount of holes you could talk about with the restraining order, it's never been enforced. Rusev's violated it a number of times, and yet he has never been arrested. Not consistent with Lana's threats. So much stuff just makes no sense with cameras being in places they shouldn't, and all this stuff. I mean, I just sometimes can't dislodge my brain from this kind of garbage that Vince McMahon makes sure that he puts on the show to distance himself as a wrestling company, you know, and make sure there's sports entertainment. I want this to end. Is this the worst thing Vince McMahon's ever done? No. Vince McMahon has done way, way worse things. Katie Vick, Vince McMahon millionaire giveaway.
Was that really Vince, though, or was that
Triple H? He approved it. He approved it. I'm talking about the storylines Vince McMahon has signed off on.
He also almost approved an incest storyline with his daughter.
Yep, with his daughter.
So there's not much we can say about it.
Triple H in a funeral home with Kane. Remember that? They were in a funeral home. And he, Triple H, you know what? I mean, like, in the casket. He has done things that he's defeated God. He went in a match with God, with Shawn Michaels. I think it was the pay-per-view after WrestleMania 22 or something. So
Vince McMahon's greatest hits.
Yeah. I mean, like, seriously, the exploding limo that only got debunked because Chris Benoit.
Four times, though.
Yeah. I mean, the stage collapsing on Vince McMahon during the millionaire giveaway. There was no follow-up to that. I mean, there's a litany of things that Vince McMahon has done worse. So this is just kind of your, I think, run-of-the-mill trash TV, but in a WWE platform television. That's what this is.
Yeah, it's just, I don't really have much to say about it. It's not something that I'm paying attention to. I've been paying attention to Asuka. I've been paying attention, excuse me, to Becky Lynch and all that stuff. But it's just something that's, like, kind of in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I've been paying attention. Like, there's, like you said, there's so many things that are going on right now. You can't really keep track of any of them. So
what do you think about,
remember,
how about,
like,
Randy Orton and AJ Styles? Randy Orton, who's been,
that's,
I guess,
interesting,
he's
to me,
reclassified as a babyface. I know Orton loves to be heel, but I guess he's back as a babyface. And having Randy Orton just continue to just torment AJ Styles as AJ Styles, you know, is infuriated over Orton. What do you like what's going on here?
No, I actually like it. I think it's good because Orton is at his best when it's as less of him as possible. When you use him in a role that he's not really talking a lot of crap and he's just kind of, he is talking crap, but he's not talking, like, they're not making him cut, like, 5-minute promos. And he's just kind of going in there and RKOing him and, like, being, like, that annoying bully that was popular in school because he was really hot. That's what Randy Orton's doing right now to AJ Styles. Like, AJ Styles is the guy who got hot later. And Randy Orton's still picking on him like he was in high school. I like it. It works for me.
It does. And Randy
is that
Orton,
a good analogy?
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, he kind of is.
He's the bad guy in every 90s and 80s movie who is like the popular jock who's like really hot and stuff like that. And like he doesn't have to prove anything to himself. And he's like annoying AJ Styles even though AJ Styles is hot now. But at one point AJ Styles wasn't hot. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I've never heard anyone use that analogy for this, but that's kind of what this is. That's kind of what this is. I mean, Randy Orton's, I mean, to use an older analogy that everyone likes to use, especially, I think it's either the King or, I don't know, Vic Joseph. They always talk about the old lion, you know, coming in, or the new lion coming in to take over the old lion's territory or whatever. I mean, this is Randy Orton, I think, at his best and the most interesting that he's been in how many years? For how many years he just kind of floated on SmackDown as the legacy star. He puts on 3-star matches, but he's never really quite the guy that WWE is going to be focusing on for the future. He's never, and you always know that that's going to be the case, that Randy Orton's never going to be the future. And I'm fine with them sticking him in the ring with AJ Styles because they put on a really good match at WrestleMania. I think that both of them, with the in-ring experience that they have, how many years and decades of experience they have between each other. I'm looking forward to this program. I love the mind games as well that Randy Orton is putting on AJ Styles. In seeing AJ Styles get RKO'd, there's just something really satisfying about that. He sells it like, you know, he got shot. I mean, it's really good stuff. I'm fine. I love this. As you said, less is more with Randy, and I'm more interested in Randy Orton than I have been in the last 5 years.
Yeah, AJ, and AJ is a good play off of him because, like, AJ as this conceited leader of this group, even though I feel like they still need more members of the group, like, that's where he's flourished in the WWE. And, like, they tried doing that in TNA, and it never worked with him. I think he was just an established babyface there, and he didn't have, like, an identity. And, like, he was still doing the same thing when he came to WWE, but, like, I think, like, just, let alone when we were talking about Rumble, that pop alone, like, gave WWE, like, just, like, all the confidence in the world in him, and he has developed so much as that heel and fitting into WWE humor. He's one of the guys who gets it right, like, trying to find that balance between entertainment and being a professional wrestler. He has flourished as, and he was great as a babyface, and I still think that he was close to none when he debuted against John Cena. All the little kids knew who he was. AJ Styles is, like, a great human being for the most part. So him doing the heel thing, though, he's gotten so comfortable in it, and it works to – it's the same kind of cockiness that Randy Orton has, that Randy Orton's always has as a heel or a face. So it just works really nice, and I'm enjoying it. It's one of the one segments that I unmute the TV for.
Well, that's good. I would agree with that. I'm being more interested in this story by the week. It's a nice slow build. It's easy to follow. I don't have to think too hard, and that's what I love about this. And there's two guys that you know can work their asses off and that are going to put on a match that is of quality. Another thing as we start to close out the show here, Heavy Machinery this past week defeated the Revival in a via pinfall in a Miracle on 34th Street fight, because WWE just cannot help themselves but do the hokey crap every single time that there's a holiday.
Yep.
They just can't. I don't know what it is, this incessant itch that has to be scratched every holiday-themed show of doing this. And I'm going to take a breath because I might rant, but you go first.
What do I think about it?
Yeah, like, what do you think about not just this match, but heavy machinery?
Well, I hate the whole hokey thing that WWE does every year. I don't like it. But I like them as a tag team. I don't think they're terrible, but I really don't want to see him, like, shirtless in the ring. I know that's me being a girl right now. I don't know what's going on with Mandy Rose. Maybe they're, like, following what's going on Twitter. It is what it is, man. I think they're going to be a big tag team at one point. I really do. I think they are going to win the titles at one point. They're just kind of like this Bodunk like tag team that's going on. They have great like presence on TV. I don't really have an opinion about it. It doesn't bother me, but like I wouldn't miss it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will agree with you on the fact that I think that Heavy Machinery down the line are going to be a big deal, and I think that they will eventually win the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. I have no problem with that. Is it time? No, but they certainly are over. I think, obviously, Otis more than Tucker, or Tucky, as Otis likes to say, and I have no problem with Otis, you know, doing his in-ring antics, but the problem is that I think that WWE, Vince McMahon, namely, is treating Otis I think that Vince McMahon views Otis as a comedy act and not as an actual legitimate contender, even after, because all tag teams are really made to break up. That's just what it's for, to eventually build single stars. So I don't think that Vince McMahon looks at Otis and goes, that's a guy that could be a top guy. He looks at him and goes, look at that bowl full of jelly. And let's exacerbate and magnify his stomach every week by talking about how much he loves ham, or spilling crap down his shirt, or having him wear shirts that are half the size, or having him always talk about eating, or whatever stereotype you like to make about men that have big stomachs. And we've seen guys in WWE that have had successful careers with bellies that have either worn a shirt, or maybe they haven't, but they've been framed as legitimate badass guys. I mean, Big Show had a bigger stomach than Otis did, as proportionally weight goes. Yokozuna, my God, Vader. I mean, I go down the list of guys that were not in quote big, you know, in WWE's Vince McMahon fantasy wet dream of being an actual, like, oh, this is what a wrestler should look like, and this is what a top guy should look like. Yet all the guys I've listed have been top guys at one point. And he takes Otis and goes, there's our comedy segment every week. And I can't stand it. I said the last week that Otis was going to be in some kind of Santa outfit. And what, sure as hell, what happens this week? Him and Otis, or him and Tucker, are in Santa outfits, not the full gear, but had the coat on and the hat on like a bunch of fools, and put Legos out like it's, you know, Christmas morning for, you know, the 5-year-old kid. I can't stand this crap. And then I loved that Revival, after the match, said that this is the kind of crap we don't like, is the sports entertainment crap of, you know, Legos and stuff. Well, why did you do it? You didn't have to use these things. No one told you to use these weapons. I'm sure there's tables and chairs if you were so inclined to use those things rather than these children's toys for weapons. So I like the fact that he pointed out that this is the crap that we don't like, and we like old school wrestling, and he said wrestling is like a dirty term, which is true, but I don't like that they had to, you know, they were what, forced to use these things, and then Vince McMahon uses Otis as a joke every single week. He is super over to a point, but he takes this, somebody that it accentuates their body, it's, I don't want to say it's body shaming, but he just can't help himself with a guy like Otis and just sees comedy. Okay, well, that's enough.
Are you done?
Jesus. Yeah, for now. Just don't poke the bear.
No, I'm not poking the bear. I agree with everything you were saying. It seems like a Vince McMahon move, but, like, not to, like, poke the bear more, but you know this whole Mandy Rose storyline is going to end up with her, like, faking him out and being like, I was never interested in you and hurting his feelings. So let's get that out of the ballpark. Like, there you go. About a month from now.
Yep.
He's going to humiliate him in front of everybody and be like, did you actually think you had a chance with me? I'm like, God is the God's greatest creation. So there you go. There's your storyline. Go watch SmackDown.
Son of a... So, number one. How do you win? So, Mandy Rose has been built around every chance she gets, making fun of how her opponents look, a la Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. How many times has she said, look at you compared to me, oh me. They use the dreamy filter every time she comes out. I think this past week they noted one of her accomplishments. They put like the stats in everybody when they come out and their accomplishments, the things they've done. She was like some kind of image winner for Mr. Olympia. She was just basically the person who stood there and looked good as they were taking pictures. I mean,
yeah,
it was a terrible.
She competed in bodybuilding.
Yeah.
That's a
like,
true fact about
wow.
her. So.
Which, great, wonderful, but you have no real accomplishment. So to have a character that is completely built around how people look, to go around and have a mismatch, the magnitude of Otis, just to basically set him up to lead him on, as you said, and then eventually break his heart because he's just kind of this lovable fool that Vince McMahon likes to look him as. That's what's going to happen. It'll put heat on Mandy, but you can't have a match with Mandy because it's not the Attitude Era, so you can't have them face each other. So somebody will have to step in and stand up to Otis. I'm sure there'll maybe some kind of tag team, but that's exactly where they're headed. As we all get, well, some of us are going to get duped into believing that they could be an actual couple. In reality, it's nothing more than a setup for Otis as he gets his heart broken in a month.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what your expectations are. Eventually, they'll get where they need to get, but for right now, they're a joke. Exactly what you said. So, again, it's not something that I'm, like, really paying attention to. They're on TV every week. That's what they want, you know?
Right.
You got Viking Raiders who are not the best shape guys, and they're the champions right now, which they seem like they're not doing much with them. But it is what it is. It's a Vince McMahon world. We just live in it. So I don't like, I just know it's going to happen. And I go, okay, I'm not interested in this. And I like mute it. So there are takeaways. Like Raw, like I was saying on Twitter, Raw on Monday was like the first one that I actually watched in full, like live in a while. Raw was actually good on Monday. There wasn't really anything that I had to complain about. I'm sure there was something that was stupid, but overall, it was a solid show, but the commentary is so bad with Jerry Lawler and these two new guys. And I don't even think it's the two new guys. It's Jerry Lawler, and they don't know what to do with them. And one guy is Michael Cole, too. He's Michael Cole Jr. So it is what it is. But Jerry Lawler being on commentary in itself makes it unwatchable. So, like, there wasn't anything bad going on Monday, and I immediately wanted to turn it off and put Buffy on, which I've watched, like, 1,700 times. Because I was just like, I can't listen to it. And then you mute it, and then you're not paying attention to it.
Yep.
Like, it's just kind of on in the background. You look up, and you see something going on. But that's the only complaint I have about Raw on Monday. I didn't hate everything. I didn't love everything. You know, there were certain things that were going on. Like I said, commentary actually at one point did call Seth the Messiah, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a CM Punk throwback right there. But there's so many things that, like, you can move around and try to make it good. It's never really going to be good. So as far as heavy machinery goes, they're going to be around for a while. They're definitely going to get up there in the scene. They're new, and they're paying their dues, and they're going to be the fat joke. And then something might not ever happen because, like, you got Kevin Owens who, I mean, he was Universal Champ, but he should have had a better run, you know? And hopefully they're building him up like that right now, but they're also trying to make him the reincarnation of Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you can't do that.
Yeah,
so
WWE
is, you know, man, WWE.
I know. And I know we're running up against time, but I do want to comment quickly on the commentary, and then we'll ride off into the sunset. Is that yes, the King As much as I loved him in the Attitude Era,
I have a story, by the way. Do your rant, but I have a side note to this. Go on.
All right. So I'll make this quick. Jerry Lawler, I loved him in the Attitude Era. He was the yin to Jim Ross's yang. They worked well together. They were awesome. He was a great color commentator, a heel color commentator to Jim Ross's very logical, great storytelling voice. They were a great team, probably the best of all time. And now you put him in 2019 WWE, and he is the biggest fool on commentary. That yes, Vic Joseph is a the demon spawn of Michael Cole, and I'm he has no voice of his own. I don't think that's really the fault of Vic Joseph. I think it's the fault of production. Because what Vic Joseph says and how he says it is almost how Michael Cole says and how he said it. It just, it feels like you could plug and play anybody. And Vic Joseph is a guy that he has like two gears, and only two gears. It's very somber, and we're going to talk about what happened last week. And then it's, you know, bottom of the ninth, walk off home run, World Series. There's no middle ground for Vic Joseph. He's one extreme or the other, and I understand he's getting his feet wet. And, you know, Samoa Joe is kind of as well, and I understand that, although Samoa Joe doesn't feel like Samoa Joe. He feels like a produced Samoa Joe, which I don't like. And yeah, you have the full on commentary.
He's been good on commentary, though. I'm not going to knock Samoa Joe. He's been solid. He's been a good kind of Corey Graves fill-in for Raw, not having Corey Graves anymore. And he actually sounds really intelligent when he's saying things.
He does.
So I'm not going to knock him.
Yeah, No. He does. I think out of the three, he's the most listenable because he has the most credibility as well. I mean, the other two, obviously Jerry has had an in-ring career, but I don't need him acting. It's like it's his first job, or it's like his first day on the job. Everything is, there's no way he's getting up from that. How is he doing this?
What is he doing?
Oh my, what is it? Like, I'm like, Jerry, you've been here for 40 years. 40 years. Years you've been in this business, and you can't tell me that somebody's gonna kick out of a DDT. I mean, this guy's acting like, you know, it's my 5-year-old nephew the first time he's ever seen it. He's acting like a complete fool. I don't need this from a 60-year-old man who we've all seen and heard grow up through the Attitude Era, through the Ruthless Aggression Era, through the Punk Era, through the PG Era, and into today. He's like regressing in intelligence. I don't understand what's happening. He's actually losing brain cells every week. And it, like you said, I understand why you're taking it away and turning it down, because it's almost unlistenable, and I can't believe I'm saying that about Jerry. But he takes away from it, and then you have Mr. 1 or 10 in Vic Joseph, and then you have a reasonable voice in Samoa Joe. So there's your commentary team for Raw.
Well, who's the other dude? Who's the young African American man?
Dio Madden. Dio Madden, who got taken out by Brock Lesnar F5 through a table.
He's pretty decent too. Again, I feel like, not to cut you off, but I feel like Jerry Lawler wasn't on that commentary staff. It was just the two of them. Like, they're doing a two show on SmackDown. It's just Cole and Graves right now. I think they would find their footing.
It's infinitely better.
They're listenable.
Infinitely better with two people.
Like you said, and Joe is an added bonus just because he's injured and they don't want to keep him off TV. Because Joe was hot before he got injured. Mm-hmm. He was super hot and he was doing a lot of things. And that's smart. That's what they did with Punk. That's a smart thing. Joe can talk and he doesn't sound like an idiot. Jerry Lawler is trying to do jokes from 1990 into now, and it doesn't work. He's terrible. He forgets it. But my story was, I don't know when it happened. Again, I haven't been here for like a month. So Charlotte was wrestling somebody, and Jerry Lawler, dead ass, that's being as explicit as possible, dead ass goes on the air. Well, we all know that, you know, Charlotte's dad is looking down on her right now, and he's so proud of her.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, Ric Flair is not dead! And you hear Vic Joseph go, you hear Vic Joseph on commentary go, Jerry, what are you doing?
That's, oh, my
Rick
God,
isn't
yes.
Dead. He literally said something along their eye. It's not verbatim, but he literally, Vic Joseph goes, Jerry, Jerry, what are you doing? Ric Flair isn't dead. And I lost my crap. I was dying. And I'm tweeting at WWE. I was like, they just say your biggest legend, who is still alive, is dead on air. Like, people were like, probably like, what? Ric Flair's dead? Because you don't know, man. It's Ric Flair. Like, that MF-er has lived a hard life. So, like, who's to say? He's been having issues. But Charlotte Flair is on TV, and this guy preludes and, like, just says something. It's basically like, Ric Flair is dead. Ric Flair is dead. And the other person on commentary went, what the hell did you just say? And that was it for me. So, from that moment on, every time I hear Lawler on commentary, I'm like, oh my God, I can't watch this.
Yeah, that, and you are correct. I had, maybe my brain took that away because I don't need to. That's almost unforgivable. I don't know how that's said unless he has some kind of unless he had a premonition. I don't know how he says that. I remember hearing something like that. I'm like, wait, what the hell did he just say? Hey. Oh my!
He was dead.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure Rick. He's been in and out of the hospital. We know that he's had health issues, and he ran his body into the damn ground with how much
Here's
he drank.
Thing.
And
if Ric Flair died, not to cut you off, if Ric Flair died, God bless him. I hope, and like, I'm not a big God believer, but like, I don't want anything to happen to Ric Flair, living legend. If Ric Flair died, it would be everywhere. It wouldn't just be in wrestling; it would be everywhere. So. Like, he says this nonchalantly, and I'm just like,
It would be on your local news. It would pop up in your Twitter feed. It would be, I mean, seriously, like, it would be absolutely everywhere. You could not avoid it, whether you're a wrestling fan or not. It would be that big of a deal. Yeah, so I remember him saying that, and I'm like, did he mean he's sitting at home and smiling and watching TV? Or did he literally mean that he's dead from, you know, looking down from heaven smiling? I mean, yeah, like, what the, God, Jerry, stop, please. Stop the pain. Just go back. Be an agent. I don't need three men in the booth anyway. I think two is more than enough. I think three is a crowd. It just jumbles up the statements and messages they're trying to send to everybody. It's a crowd. I don't need it. I don't care how good you think the three are. Renee Young wasn't that great anyway, and she admitted she wasn't great, and she wasn't. And I'm, you know, that just is what it is. And so they have three. You don't need three. You don't. I'm fine with two, but all right. Well,
yeah. Well, and going back, even like, yeah, Renee Young was terrible on commentary, and she admitted it. I would still take Renee Young a little over him.
Yeah, I agree. I can't believe I'm saying that. I love Renee.
At least like Renee Young's like with it, like kind of like
she's self-aware.
And then you listen to Beth Phoenix, and Beth Phoenix is like awesome on commentary.
She's very good.
Actually a pleasure to listen to on commentary. But the Jerry Lawler needs to go, and I have no idea. Like, ever since he had the heart attack on live TV, and I know that's horrible to say, he's just been like, all right, just, like, get him out of this role. Like, and they brought him back. Like, for the reboot, too, for the series premiere, they're like, yeah, we're going to stick Jerry Lawler in there. You're like, what? What are you doing?
I mean, he's no Jim Ross. And Jim Ross, I think, is doing a great job at AEW. Is he what he was in the 90s? No, he's a little bit slower. But hey, I would be too if I were 20 years older. But Jim Ross has at least got still, you know, he's got about 80% of what he was. Jerry the King Lawler, it's like he received shock therapy and someone was just like, you know, I don't know, just draining part of his brain from his head. And he, something is just not right. Like, I get nothing. He detracts from the product. Like you said, turn down the volume. I do the same thing. And I tune it out. I don't know. So, God.
I'm sorry. I did it again.
Damn it. Well, I'm mildly swearing, which is still under PG rules. And so,
I did good too.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. You did. Usually I have to like edit half your, no, not half, but usually I do have to like try to go through and scrub some stuff, but stuff slides through. But maybe you and I should just do like a side explicit only podcast and we don't have to worry about it.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah. No, like seriously, I'm very interested. Like, I'm big into conspiracy theories. I do believe there's aliens. I mean, like, how can you not in the universe? Like, I mean, anybody who believes that there's not aliens in the universe, Have you looked at the size of it? Have you seen the size of it? Right? And you could say, oh, well, we haven't found it. I'm like, yeah, we've explored like a fraction of 1% of our universe. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. The whole thing and cover-ups with Roswell, New Mexico and Area 51, all this stuff. Like, it interests the hell out of me, yeah.
We're going to do a side podcast.
And ghosts and demons and all that kind of stuff. Like, I watch Ghost Adventures like it's my job. I mean, sometimes I love that show. All that. Yeah, all this stuff is just, like, fascinating to me. I don't know how the hell we got on that, but seriously. I mean, maybe we do something else. I mean, besides wrestling. But, yeah, I love all that kind of stuff. It's fascinating. So, all right, Mary. Well, I know you've got to go. I've got to get going. It's Christmas week. It is the maximum. Crazy. What's that?
It's crazy.
It's nuts. It's crazy. My bank account is like, you know, negative something probably. And it is it's just that lovely time of year that it's you know, spread the holiday cheer and all that nonsensical crap. But hey, it's going to be over soon. We've only got another week and a half, and it's going to be 2020. So. Mary,
new
I want
decade, to say new year.
Yes, new yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. New year, new me. Hashtag year, new year, new me. Right. Oh, God, please. I don't know. I'm not big on like people thinking that, oh, it's going to flip to the new year. I'm going to do everything different. And then like 2 weeks later, it's back to like
I make, you know, a list, and some of them I knock out and some of them I don't. But the ones that I don't knock out, I always put them back on the list. It's always a new year to try it again.
Smart. Yeah, see? And I hope that it's a much less stressful year for you in 2020. All right. Well, I'm going to end it here because I'm going to take a breath, and I might rant on my own and do something and like pace around my apartment.
Okay,
I don't
cool.
know.
Let me know how that goes.
Yeah. I need to get some energy out. Now I'm all fired up about stuff. So, all right. Well, Mary, thank you again for coming on. I hope you enjoy the holidays. For whatever that may be worth to you, whatever that may be, whatever version of a stress-free holiday that may be. And we will talk again. We'll be in the thick of the Rumble season, so I'm looking forward to it.
I appreciate you for welcoming me back. I will be here with bells on, and I wish you a great new year and a happy holiday. And guys, I'm going to do my best, but, you know, we'll see how it happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I said, maybe a conspiracy theory show is coming.
Oh, no, we're doing
it. We're teasing it. No, I'm all in.
We're doing
I'm
it.
All in.
We're all
so.
Over it.
All right. Enjoy your night, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Later, man.
All right. Bye. All right, guys, we're going to get back to the show in just a second. But first, I'd like to talk about the sponsor of the show today. It's Fire Lion. They're an innovative and forward-thinking company that specializes in brand building, design, web development, consultation, and much more. The passionate team at FireLion is 100% committed to providing their clients with a state-of-the-art digital design. You can find out more and get in touch with FireLion at GoFireLion.com. That's GoFireLion.com. Guys, I've checked them out. They have awesome websites they've done. They're very professional. It looks great. Hit them up at GoFireLion.com.